SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website too, stevebick.com, a little bit of a dreary day here, weather-wise, upstate. But downstate, I think it looks okay. And it looks okay because there's a nice carryover to take a look at Belmont today, and that is courtesy of a crazy horse in the nightcap yesterday, Eddie Barker. Huh. Unbelievable. Live, I was live to a bunch of horses, and for decent money, there was a couple of nice returns, potentially, and in the late stages of that nightcap yesterday, things scene shifted remarkably, and Barker, third start under Eddie's care, gets the win. Amanda Lane with Sammy Camacho. I like Sammy. I didn't like him yesterday. That was brutal. Merlin's Muse was paying 200, and she's Dreamin', who I kind of sniffed out a little bit. Tommy Bush was paying 460 for the pick four. And yeah, here's a New York bred, 1 for 21. Eddie Barker does a good job. He put Amanda Lane back on the turf. This is Stonegate, you know, close by here in Fort Edward, Bill Johnson and his father, and an Into Mischief mare, 5-year-old. You know, that's okay. Spent most of the past year at Finger Lakes and came in for the winter and had made, I don't know, three turf starts. And was okay in those the starts. This one snuck in 59 to 1. And, you know, I guess she was a C. I didn't give her much chance. Not when there was a horse like Ailish and Merlin's Muse, and as I mentioned, the Bush horse, you know, whose allowance race last May, you know, was making a seasonal debut as a 5-year-old for Tommy Bush and Dreammaker Racing. So $24,000 pick six carryover today. You know, yesterday was the first of those Thursday Twilight cards, and it was fun actually. It was. I know some people were like curious, why are they doing a Thursday Twilight? And it basically plugs in with Churchill. It's for you know, kind of simulcast scheduling to harmonize. And it was fun. I actually enjoyed having, you know, races in New York, you know, going until, you know, 7:15, 7:20. I didn't enjoy the ninth. In the stake yesterday, we should mention, how about a new record at a mile and 3/8 at Belmont. And the flat out goes to Marconi. Here's another older horse. I cannot remember the last time Todd Pletcher had, you know, this many older horses, you know, where the four and ups overshadowed the 3-year-olds. But it absolutely does right now. And this is that very pricey Marconi, the 4-year-old now, the Tappet colt, 2 in a row. He won the skip away, going 1 3/16 this winter, comes back north. You know, and after this race, you do wonder, this, he might have been a good Pimlico special candidate But I think Todd has got, I think he's covered in there. This is the Tappet colt, bred by the Morans, that raised $2 million as a Keeneland yearling. And the partnership of Coolmore and Bridalwood. Haven't seen a figure. This is the brother of Mucho Macho Man. And I certainly got a nice ride from Jose Lascano. Lascano had a big day yesterday. Rudy Rodriguez sent out Mike Rapoli's tour de force, who, you know, did exactly what you kind of thought he was going to do. And I picked Tour de Force and then used Marconi as an A. Those were my two A's. And I, you know, I thought, all right, Tour de Force is going to be a decent price in here. And he was. And took him as far as he could, but then got overhauled late. And Rocketry ran an improved race after that skip away to start the season, his five-year-old season, down at Gulfstream. Against Marconi, where he did not run well. This was improved, and he was flying late. But he ended up with a track record. And I should have looked up whose record it eclipsed. In fact, you know what? I can reach down here and where's my most recent American Racing Manual? That will tell us. But it's not within reach. All right, so much for that. So there's your quick racing recap from yesterday, just because I played myself and was interested. And it was worth playing, as it turned out. You did have, you know, even with that low-priced favorite that started things off, Nisha. Second start for Danny Gargan and for Three Diamonds. Ran very well at a short number. And then that Kulik Bear for Derek Ryan. And that was a nice little number for Kulik Bear. Derek Ryan with the curling out of Kulik Cat, the Stone Street homebred. Nice that Derek Ryan gets some horses from Stone Street. And then the flat out and that crazy state bred. There's nothing like state bred New York bred turf allowances. They are... you've heard me for years talk about big prices. Not necessarily that big. But as Johnny I says, Eddie Barker. Eddie does a good job. I'll tell you what. The news of the day yesterday, of course, we had a couple of pieces of news. We had Preakness activity and a bit of a surprise because Brad Cox originally had talked about Warrior's Charge running in the Sir Barton, and it's a landmark. Jennifer Kelly today noting another landmark, another Sir Barton milepost here, 100 years removed from his Triple Crown. But no Sir Barton for Warrior's Charge. Warrior's Charge is going to compete in the Preakness, and he does change the pace scenario a little bit. And we're going to, at noon today, or give or take, the ExpressBet Preakness wagering guide is going to be released. I'll tell you now, I picked Always Mining, but that was on Wednesday, you know, working off the PPs from Wednesday, not expecting Warrior's Charge to be involved, and we'll obviously have to reevaluate, and we'll do in the updates next week. In fact, probably now we'll wait for the draw. The draw is Wednesday. It's a traditional draw. It's not, you know, it's not a early in the week draw. Wednesday for Saturday, and it's they're doing something away from the racetrack late in the afternoon. There's a 4 to 6 event. Kind of a draw something live. Fourth Street, of course. Fourth Street Live is Louisville. It's something live. Power Plant. The Power Plant, is that what it is? Power Plant Live. It's here somewhere. I've got it in the. It was in the mail yesterday. Dave Joseph sending out the. the information. I'll tell you exactly what. So for those that are, and over the years, there's been some fun. There's been some fun Preakness draws. I can remember going down to the aquarium. Right, there was one at the aquarium. They've done it down on the Inner Harbor several times over the years. And yeah, it's here somewhere. There it is. Here we go. Post position draw, Preakness Stakes, Wednesday, May 15th, 4 to 6, Power Plant Live, yep, down on Marketplace. So that'll be the social event. I think one year was it at Camden Yards, maybe? Anyway, a Wednesday draw. So expect the PPs a little late on Wednesday. The racing office at Pimlico, they'll put the rest of the fields together, and there'll be an overnight with the rest of the fields. So that'll come out, you know, fairly early in the afternoon, and they'll leave open the feature for the fill-in. So that's the early plan next week, and so we're going to use the ExpressBet Preakness wagering guide as a, you know, facts and figures and some news and notes, that kind of thing. And then, you know, once we get this field officially assembled, then I guess we can figure out any changes. But I really, the more I looked at it, the more I thought, why can't Always Mining win this? And frankly, I don't, even with Warrior's Charge, there's no, you know, there's nothing that says that Kelly Rubley and Runnymede's gelding can't win. As I mentioned yesterday, he's going to try to emulate the last Maryland bred winner of this race, Deputed Testimony, 1983. And as a gelding, he can put his name next to Funnyside, 2003. And, of course, Funnyside demolished that Preakness field. So last gelding and last Maryland bred. And, you know, it's funny. There's going to be some stories. I'll work this in next week without fail. There was a Lasix angle and a Lasix discussion point to that Deputed Testimony Preakness, because Desert Wine, they went to court to get the okay to use Lasix. And Bill Boniface was not comfortable at first with that. He threatened to not run Deputed Testimony, actually. And there's also a sidebar to that race, because that was another wet track classic. And Boniface used Mudcocks on Deputed Testimony, and he was the only horse in the race that used them. And obviously, you know, getting a hold of that track, that, you know, that counted for something. So with a Maryland bred in, there nothing gets more attention than a Maryland bred in the Preakness. So looking forward to it. Let me give you an idea of what we're doing today, because we've got a nice lineup, and there'll be the last of our 5 days worth of Derby post script and conversation. And we'll start it off after the break with Sean Clancy. And there may not be, you know, more of a go-to media member than Clancy for a, you know, a reasonable response. So we'll get Sean Clancy's level-headed Derby assessment. And Clancy is en route to Nashville for the Iroquois. If you listened in to yesterday live or the replay since, Bill Gallo joined us. And Sean will talk about Iroquois, and he'll be sure to give me grief for not going again this year. That's on the list of events to attend. Marty McGee, we'll get Marty, who's been following the Preakness news and tracking it, along with Jay Pribben. But Marty, with the story out of the Brad Cox barn, Cox will be sending out his first two Triple Crown starters. Nick Tamaro, and we'll get Marty's take. Nick Tamaro, top of hour two. We'll get Nick's view of how Saturday, how he made out, and his thoughts. And we'll look at Belmont, and of course, got a really fun card at Belmont tomorrow. I cannot remember too many occasions where a graded stake opened the card at Belmont. But the Vagrancy is the first race tomorrow. It's kind of cool. 1:30. And Separation of Powers makes her seasonal debut in there. Then the Peter Pan, which really feels like a Final Jeopardy versus Intrepid Heart matchup to some degree with some global campaign thrown in. But there's also the Man of War and the Run Happy. There is tomorrow the 8th, 9th, and 10th tie-in with races at Woodbine and Monmouth for the cross-country pick five as well. It starts with the Ballade at Woodbine, the Woodbine 8th, 4:59, and then the Serena's Song at Monmouth at 5:25. And then the 8th, 9th, and 10th, which is a good maiden turf race going long for fillies and mares, and the Run Happy and the Man of War. That's the cross-country pick five tomorrow. And that'll be on TV, of course, with the Fox coverage. Then James Scully. We'll get Scully's postmortems to the weekend and some plays. Paul Matisse. I want to get Paul's take. Ed DeRosa. Rick Hammerly. And then part two of the Nick Cassata visit. Slam Dunk Racing. And we were cut off the last 6-7 minutes yesterday, courtesy of Comcast, who was down apparently in South Florida for 8 or 9 hours yesterday. Tremendous. Public utility. Well done. Back after this weekend preview at the races. Sean Clancy first at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The 145th Kentucky Derby is in the books, and it was a wild one. Now it's off to Baltimore for the second leg of the Triple Crown. Can Country House rebound in 2 weeks with another solid performance, or will a new face smile at Pimlico? See what the experts have to say in ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide. That's right, the guide is free to everyone and available online at ExpressBet.com. Inside the guide, you'll find expert selections, analysis, and suggested $100 wagering strategies from some of the game's sharpest handicappers, writers, and broadcasters. Don't plunk down your hard-earned bread until you've read what these guys have to say. Also, ExpressBet's free Preakness Wager Guide provides you with important stats and trends you won't find anywhere else. Visit ExpressBet.com to access the free Preakness Wager Guide beginning Friday, May 10th, and an updated version that includes Eddie Olchek's picks May 16th. Open a new ExpressBet account and get up to a $500 welcome bonus. Visit the website for complete details.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. Oh, yeah,
we're back at the races, 20 minutes into hour one. Sean Clancy is heading to Nashville, and I know his first question for me is, why am I not doing the same? Good morning.
How are you? Come on. We had the same conversation last year. And you know what? Some of your readers, I mean, your listeners, they actually were convinced you were going to do it. I said, I don't know.
It's such an awkward strand.
When it's all said and done, your last breath, you're going to say, God, I wish I didn't go to Nashville that year for the year. Boy, what a mistake that was. You think that's what you, that's the last thing you're going to say?
Probably, yeah. I'm going to say, Tina, why didn't we go? Why didn't we go to Iroquois? No, we'd want to go. Believe me, but I have to plan. If I had not been on the road nonstop, literally since February, I just
plan. I gave you a year.
it's
same weekend, the second Saturday in May.
But the problem is, the problem is
from the Derby to Nashville.
I know. No, that's what we're gonna do. There's gonna be a year. We're gonna stay we'll stay at Churchill and do the post Derby stuff on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then shift tack Thursday, Friday to Percy Warner.
Exactly. All right, we're counting on you.
That's the plan. All right. But if I do that, you have to come and co-host.
Oh, I'll be there.
All right. Well, before we talk about all the races you're winning and Jibril Faro and much more, let's get your, I'm sure, very reasonable and level-headed response to the absolute lunacy from last Saturday.
Well, you know, the thing, I don't know if I can articulate it, but the thing that I think you have to remember when it comes to horse racing is that all of us got involved in the sport for these very reasons, that it's a really tough game. You lose way more often than you win. It's pure chaos. There's 1,000 variables. You lose, you have good beats, you have bad beats, you get disqualified, you get put up. Every time you win a race, there's 10 guys behind you going, oh, my God, a terrible trip. Did you see what happened? I got a bad ride. Oh, the post got me. The track got me. The surface was wrong. So, you know, when it doesn't go your way, I just don't think any of us can jump up and down and go, oh, it's unfair. This is the game that we play. This is the game we like. This is the game that we have been fortunate enough to play all these years. So I think when something goes wrong or something out of the ordinary. You can't just vilify horse racing for it. This is the game. This is the game we play. And win, lose, or draw, it all equals out, and you have to appreciate the game for what it is. I think that's the most important thing, just the perspective to remember. You can argue all you want, but about what should have happened and what could have happened, but I think you can't lose faith in the game because this is the game. This is the game that we have all fallen for and we've spent our lives doing. So you can't vilify the game when something out of the ordinary happens.
I agree. I mean, and I haven't been, I mean, from my end of it, I'm not critical of what transpired. I mean, I know that there's elements, obviously, that people are a little miffed or mystified by, including the KHRC and the stewards as a group not answering questions beyond issuing that statement Saturday night. And we should provide people with an update. In fact, Gary West did not meet yesterday with the stewards and has not followed through or requested a meeting. And so the anticipation of what might have transpired yesterday, what we thought was going to transpire, never came to be. And West is going in another direction and issued his own statement yesterday that he's pursuing all avenues and that he feels that, you know, he's got a legal recourse that he's going to pursue. So I think that's to the consternation of a lot of people, but it's very understandable. I think a lot of this could have been avoided, Sean, had they met with him on Saturday night and just showed him what they saw and explained, he's a major horse player. If they had said, this is what we saw, this is why we took you down, I think he might have been a lot more accepting of that. He was accepting of it minutes after the race, but, then the slow burn started.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I understand I understand where he's coming from. I don't think that's the way to handle it. But and I don't think the Today Show interview was. I thought that didn't help the sport or the cause. I understand where he's coming from, but I also, like I said, I think this is the game and it's the game we play. So I think it's disappointing that it's now. It's becoming, I mean, it was a wild moment on Saturday evening, but now it's become a longer, slower, more negative event, which I think is disappointing.
Are you as interested and intrigued by the general public's response? Because they've kept this story top of mind certainly longer than a normal Derby result would have.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that has surprised me how much people are talking about it. I mean, everywhere I go, people who barely know that I'm in the sport have asked me about it. Some people see it's a fascinating, and again, this is the game. I mean, this is what I love about the game. The two people, or in this case, millions of people, can see the same thing and come up with so many differing opinions and point of views, which I think it's fascinating. I mean, and that's the art of the sport. Like when you get two bettors together and they watch the same race and one guy comes out of it with a completely different take, is going to bet the horse back. And your take is that horse is over the top and not going to run well in 3 weeks. So, and that's the essence of horse racing. So that part's pretty interesting to watch. The varying degrees of opinions on all of it. I mean, and today's world, social media and the technology and internet is so there, and it's that part is only going to get. Well, I don't know if you want to say better or worse, but in a way, it's worse. Where you just have so many, the people now have a voice, and the louder and wilder and more negative seems like they get a lot of attention when it comes to this. So. I think in the world we live in today, I mean, imagine Genuine Risk and Codex in today's world. I mean, imagine that. That would have gone on. And I think that would have been way worse than this or more, you know, kind of more of a topic than this probably.
No, that's a good point. And in fact, I look up and I've got this black and white picture of Leroy Jolly at the hearing, at the administrative hearing, looking just forlorn, frankly. That's a great analogy. Well, I frequently reference you because I don't know when it was, last year or last summer, the summer before, where I was bemoaning a something that was being debated publicly, and you said, who cares what's being said? Just because somebody has a keyboard doesn't mean they should be paid attention to.
Yeah, exactly. No, I always say, people complain about social media, and I guess I just did, but people complain about social media, and I said, well, it is optional. I mean, you don't have to follow it. You don't have to get all worked up about it. It is optional.
Well put. Do you have a steward's call that you made watching and watching replays?
I thought the horse would come down. I mean, I just know in my years of experience, I just don't think you can make that move. I mean, you can go from that lane to the, you know, from the one lane to the five lane and rack up horses like that. I mean, every steward school and every jockey meeting and I rode 1,000 races, and I know if I did that, I would come down. I mean, that's just how it was. So, again, it's disappointing that it happened on the stage of the Derby. But one could argue the stewards are following the rules, and one could argue that it's actually a credit to the sport that they followed the rules on the biggest day, as opposed to changing their mind or succumbing to the pressure of the moment. That is the rule, and they followed the rule. Again, you can argue whether I had never understand the steward's inquiry, claim a foul, or anything else. I've always argued that I don't know why they talk to the jockeys to this day. I just, no sport in the world, you call a foul and then ask the two guys what they thought. That has never made any sense to me. I know there's jockeys who can really speak well and can convince you of anything, and there's other jockeys who don't speak well, and they couldn't convince you if the sky was blue. So, but that's another subject. I thought the horse should come down. Disappointing. He's best horse in the race, but I don't think you just can't do that. That's what I've followed my whole career, and I think most people would. And he can't, I mean, the thing yes, there's always cases that was worse and they didn't take that horse down, or this happened, you can't argue that, because it is, I mean, you know, that's part of back to horse racing. You have three stewards with opinions, and that's how the game is governed. I don't know how you're going to change that.
I agree. And, you know, there's elements of this that make it much more difficult to accept or to move on from. Even though we do hear, and I am hearing more and more, you know, people saying, let's just move on to the next topic. And we're going to move on to the next topic, which is all the good things that are happening for your River Dee stable, Sean. And that includes already here in the early season, in the spring portion of the Steeplechase calendar, a handful of wins, including allowance performances, and you're well positioned here coming out of that win in the Queen's Cup and now I'm going to forget where in North Carolina that's held.
Near Charlotte, Mineral Springs, near Charlotte.
Mineral Springs, well done. And that's Gibrafaro, and then last week at the Plains, you sent out a winner as well.
Yeah, you know this game. When you I put away both horses in November, Gibrafaro and Goss Despair, and picked out two spring spots. And you know, it doesn't usually happen that way, but they got there on top of their game. Gibrafaro, that was his last race in the novice division. He had one more race he could still win, so we aimed at that $100,000 stake at Queen's Cup. So that was sweet to see him deliver that. He was due. He had been second and three novice stakes last year, so that was rewarding. Neat horse, very proud of him. England thought he would thought he would relish America, just look like an American type horse, and he's done very well for us. And then Goss Despair, Charlie Lopresti trained him for us last year, and I wanted to make a change. He just wasn't really going on the flat. He'd won a maiden race and a non-winners of 2 for 50, but didn't seem like he was going to get through that A other than or move on to the 2 other than condition on the flat. At that trip, a mile and a 16th, just not fast enough. So I moved him to Jack Fisher and won a mile and a half A other than the $40,000 purse. So that was good too. So we were off to a good start.
Yeah, and you had included run last week as well in an allowance, and Todd Wyatt handling included. Jack Fisher, it's unbelievable. Talked yesterday with Bill Gallo, Sean, and Fisher is just out of control to start this season.
Yeah, he last year I think he went 1 for 26 or something. 1 for his first 26. He's been champion trainer 12 times, and last year he just got off to a desperate start. And Jack's not that he isn't the most I won't say articulate, but he doesn't really give you a lot of he can't explain his thoughts and how things work. But I asked him if anything, what was different this year from last year, and he said, "It just made me mad last year." And I guess when he gets mad, he comes out swinging, because this year I think he's won 13 races from 30 some starts. I mean, he's just been everything he runs has been live, and he's got the best stable for sure. I mean, he's Chad Brown or Todd Pletcher steeplechasing. He's got horses for every condition, and he's been strong so far.
Well, talk a little bit before we let you go and board the plane. Talk about tomorrow and the Iroquois. It's obviously a huge spot, and you're facing off against a trio for the Jack also for Bruton that Jack is sending out, and between Scorpiancer, Moscato, and Jaleo, a pretty formidable trio. And what do you think?
Yeah, they're all good horses, those three. They're more proven than Jibber Farrow in this division. Like I said, with Jibber Farrow, we're coming out of the novice division. There's nowhere else to run them. Coming back in 2 weeks, which, when guys complain they can't come back from the Derby to the Preakness, Jibber Farrow went 2.25 miles 2 weeks ago, and he's gone 3 miles this week, shipped to Charlotte, North Carolina, and shipping back to Nashville, Tennessee. So hopefully he can handle it. He handles his racing pretty well. So 3 miles is a big step up for him. He's never gone 3 miles. It's raining down there, so we got soft ground to contend with, too. So, it's his acid test for sure. I mean, this is his toughest task. And as Steve Asmussen always reminds me, every time a horse does something great, we reward him with something tougher. And that's how the game's played. So I think he'll run well. I mean, I think he's got a chance. Moscato is probably the best horse. He won the Temple Gloucester. Should handle the ground. Scorpiancer's former champion. He needs to kind of rebound and get them back to his best form. But, six horse field for $150,000, biggest, richest race of the spring season in steeplechasing. So, he has to take a chance.
Well, it one of the big early season races on the steeplechase calendar, and then we turn to the flat track season. Some Monmouth and Saratoga and Colonial. Sean, best of luck to you. You got something else too, right?
I actually ran City Dreamer in the Novice Stake. He was fourth to Jibber Farrow Queen's Cup. And then I run a maiden named Archinova, who some of the flat guys would probably remember. He's a horse.
Yeah.
Ian Wilkes, that's in decent form. He makes his first start over hurdles.
Excellent. Excellent. Enjoy the trip. I will get there, I promise. And
tomorrow never comes.
Who's covering Preakness next week for you guys? Who's going to be in Baltimore?
Definitely Tom Law will be there. Joe will be there. Be there for sure for at least part of it. So we'll be in force.
Excellent. Well, Sean, I appreciate the response to the Derby equation, and looking forward to watching in on nationalsteeplechase.com. They'll be the stream of all the action, including the featured Iroquois. Safe travels and safe
all
trips
right,
for the horses.
Steve. Thanks, Steve. You're the best.
Sean Clancy, everybody. It used to be that he was Saratoga Special, but then the newspaper Saratoga Special, they took over, and so now he's just regular by Sean Clancy on Twitter, and you should be following him. Following Sean is Marty McGee. Mart,
Beck, what's going on, Beck?
Well, you're on top of the news, and how about Marshall Graham going into the pocket and adding Warriors Charge to this Preakness? Got to be what, 60,000 to nominate and 90,000 to enter, so it's a $150,000 dice roll.
Yeah, it's $150, so you know he's got to be. You'd think on the odds, a guy like Marshall would know the odds on that. He's got to be more than 8-1 or whatever. What would he get back? Yeah. You know, he's only going to get 6-1 back on his money, or 5-1 if he wins. So I don't think he's going to be 5-1. But anyway, you know, it's a wide open race. It's as I quoted Keith Fussell saying, the Pimlico line maker. At least we don't have an odds on favorite this year. So it looks like Improbable will be about 2-1, and War Will maybe 4-1, something like that. And everybody else kind of in a little jumble, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever. So, pretty interesting betting race in that aspect.
Well, and of course, you've got quite a few of the horses there at Churchill that are staying over and preparing, and that includes the likely favorite when it comes to Baffert and the Justify team with Improbable. And how much more work, I suppose, you know, Baffert's funny. Sometimes he gives his Derby exiters, you know, a breeze. Sometimes he doesn't. You got Signal Man there, of course, as well. Owendale, the other Brad Cox trainee, who I think merits a long look off that Lexington win. Who am I missing that's still on hand?
Let's see. We still have Bodie Express State here instead of going back to Florida.
Okay, yeah.
War of Will, of course, is here.
Sure.
And then you've got Laughing Fox got here on Monday from Oaklawn after winning that race last Saturday. So there's 7 of the 11 probables who are still at Churchill. We've got flights going out. It's the usual schedule, Steve. They have one from California. I guess that's the one bringing another Twist of Fate. On Tuesday, it'll leave early Tuesday, stop in Lexington, and pick up and drop off and whatever, and then head to BWI. And then on Wednesday, there'll be a morning flight from Louisville to BWI, and that's usually the one that carries most of the Preakness horses. So, you know, if Baffert's going to do this, maybe have a little blowout with Improbable, and I don't really have a feel for that right now from him or Jimmy Barnes. I would guess it would come maybe Sunday or Monday, something relatively short. I've seen some video of Bob talking about how good Improbable came out of the race. That was from California. So, you know, with the Baffert Smiths' success and their reputation and everything, that horse has to be the favorite in there, although, you know, again, I think it's a pretty wide open race.
The rest of the cast, as we've been following, Bourbon War, of course, is in New York, and Dave Grenig been tracking his work. You've got the Marylanders on hand at Fair Hill, always mining for Kelly Rubley, and win-win-win for Mrs. Weber and Mike Trombetta. And that would pretty much... You talk about another twist, that's it. That's the cast.
I saw on Twitter from Gary Quill that Always Mining actually breezed this morning at Fair Hill over the Tepeta, half mile or so. And then Mike Trombetta is supposed to decide by noon or so, I think, on the status of win-win-win. All indications from me, Steve, is he wants to run and he's going to run.
Well, that was... I've kind of been involved. I've kind of been had the finger on the pulse in this one with win win win, and I've been feeding Mike the probables and the changes as it's as the field has morphed. One thing that Warriors Charge does, Marty, is certainly going to add some needed pace. And Kelly Rubley can't be thrilled that Warriors Charge has thrown the hat into the ring.
No, his two races at Oaklawn, both his maiden win in March and then his allowance win on April 12th, both were in brazen Serengeti Empress like style of where he just went to the front and opened up, and that was the end of it. He probably didn't beat much, but his buyers were good. He got like an 87 in the maiden win and a 96 in the allowance win, and that those compare very favorably, as you would imagine, with a lot of these other horses in the Preakness field. And I'm sure that Brad Cox, the trainer, being the kind of figures guy, he'll text me once in a while for a buyer number on a certain horse. And I think that's probably one of the factors that went into them saying, let's go ahead and roll the dice with this horse.
Well, we'll let the rest of the dust settle on the activities toward Preakness. I gave everybody the information on the Wednesday draw at Power Plant Live late in the afternoon Wednesday, so people won't see PPs probably until, I don't know, 7:30 on Wednesday night, so they'll get a little bit of a later start handicapping than we got for Derby. Meanwhile, Mart, let's turn our attention to the activities at the Downs. I reached out to you Monday. I ended up, Dave Grenick joined us on Monday, Jay Privman on Tuesday, and, of course, we had Andy Beyer and Steve Crist as well for their takes. And, have had a little bit more time to think about it and to be, on the ground getting reaction from horsemen and other, other observers around the Downs. Your take on what we saw Saturday evening.
Well, I think it's more people having been asked and conversed with so many people. I have the feeling that more people than not were in favor of the takedown. I happen to think it was not the right call, but that is only my opinion. I don't want to cast any kind of aspersions at any of the stewards. I have the utmost respect for all three of them, having worked with them, alongside them for so many years. It was a tough call. I've likened it to blocking charging in basketball, which is almost always impossible as far as I'm concerned. Some of these pass interference calls and holding in football, it was that type of borderline call, which if it went either way, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. So my personal take on it is if we want to go down that rabbit hole of scrutinizing ever so closely as this has been a foul in the Kentucky Derby, I think you're asking for trouble. I had somebody say to me, well, what about Country House pinching off somebody into the first turn? Well, what about it? Do we need to take the microscope and the magnifying glass out on that? I mean, I really think it opens a can of worms. But again, Steve, that's just my take. I thought that the take that, we're going to teach these guys a lesson. We don't want this to become a habit in the Derby habit. Well, the one thing was accidental. Luis Saiz did everything he could. Once that horse took the one jump outward from the rail, the centrifugal force of being in the turn was going to take him out a few paths. That's inevitable. That's physics right there. So he tried to get him back. I just think that I went to Simul Torture on Wednesday for a couple hours over at Indiana Grand, and I was watching Delaware Park, and we had about three or four stewards' inquiries. I mean, do we want to have horse racing or do we want to have steward racing? And I understand that, yes, it probably was a foul. I know that. But by the same token, my goodness, we've had so many things happen in the Kentucky Derby, which doesn't make it right that he wouldn't be taken down. But, again, if I was in the stands, and I wasn't, I would have left the number up. Probably would have been criticized just as severely as these stewards are being criticized for what they did, and that's it.
Well, and you did mention something that we could take a minute to help people understand, because I answered a question on Twitter about this. Churchill seats one steward. The KHRC seats the other two. The chief state steward is Barbara Borden, who is widely respected. Butch Beecraft has been around. He's the other KHRC. He's been around the game a long time. And then Tyler Picklesheimer, who a lot of us, you know, a lot of us know from his position at Colonial and Kentucky Downs and Turfway as the racing secretary. He is the steward from Churchill. And, you know, this is a good group of stewards. Those that are questioning the merits of you know, the three judges in the stand, that's you can question how things were handled from a public relations standpoint, but you know, their merits as judges is quite good.
Yeah, their merits, their integrity, their character, they're all sharp, they're all competent. And it's just an honest disagreement if you're on the other side with what they call that. It's just we're all going to have different opinions.
Well, from a race standpoint and from a performance standpoint, Mark, give us a little bit of Derby and the rest of the weekend. You know, what you were, you know, most taken with, what has stuck with you here days later.
Well, I really think win. They came by me the first time. Of course, you and I had been touting him, and I liked him, and I bet on him and everything else. He was jumping up and down in that slop, and I saw this happen with Hansel back in 91, where it's like, nope, not going to win. I've seen it happen with so many of these horses, actually,
sure.
where they're getting that just ton of kickback in their face, and they're just, it's like they're shell-shocked or something. So he ran creditably, and I really think that Mike is going to have him ready to run a lot better race. I think he's going to be a major factor in the Preakness at 8 or 10 to 1 or so. As far as Maximum Security, I still can't get over the fact he ran him for 16. I mean, it's just, how does that happen? I don't know how that, you got a horse that good, why would you risk him for the 16? So anyway, I guess he's the first Derby finisher since who? Charismatic to have a tag on his PPs. Has anybody brought that up? You know, it's been 20 years. It's very rare that you have a Derby winner with a claiming figure on his PPs. So, but obviously he ran a heck of a race when they straightened for home. Nobody was getting past him. And I just thought that, you know, another thing about the DQs, Steve, the slick track, the quagmire they were in, I think that begs for some leeway in terms of moving over various paths and stuff. And so, obviously, a number of horses didn't run as well as they could have. I think Win is definitely one of them, and there's probably a number of others.
Well, and you know, you bring up Hansel, and that's a good example of coming back in the Preakness, and you know, horses that were up the track or, you know, were off the board. Pine Bluff was fifth in 92. Louis Couture's, I talked to Nick Zito the other day, and Nick was bringing up Louis Couture's, who was 16th,
yeah.
Right?
That's who I was thinking of. You know, he beat Skip Away on the square. That was really a memorable race. And that was the last time we had the a Preakness without the Derby winner, too.
Oh, look at you. Look at you. And it didn't take Jay Bridman long either, coming up with 1951, the last time the top four Derby finishers, none of them made it to Baltimore.
Well, and I also did a little research, and before the triumvirate of Grindstone, Spend a Buck, and Gato del Sol being the last Derby winners to not run, you have to go back to Tommy Lee, the year of your birth, 1959, for the previous Derby winner who didn't show up in Baltimore.
Very nicely done. Very nicely done. And, of course, also your year of birth and Jay's in addition. So it's one
and
of
the year that the year that the National Turf Riders and Breeders, National Turf Riders and Broadcasters Association organization was founded in 1959.
Look at that! You're pulling out all the stops here. Unbelievable. Well, Mart, other than Derby, let's touch on Amos had a wonderful conversation with Tom on Monday in the aftermath of Serengeti Empress's performance. Joel Politti and Amos deserve tremendous credit for the way in which they handled things coming out of the fiasco in the Fairgrounds Oaks, the bleeding incident, and they marched forward. And they let everybody, you know, look inside behind the curtain as they prepared. Mitoli is getting just tons of attention coming out of this with his effort. And McKinsey, too. The two of them are on a collision course for the Metropolitan Handicap.
Those were the horses I was going to mention. Yeah, I'm just wondering what, you know, Tom keeps telling me I'm doing nothing with Serengeti Empress. This is the month of May is a month of rest with her. And I'm thinking, well, June 8th is when the Acorn is. So you got to do a little something with her. You know, she's going to run at that because he's talking about doing that. And Wayne Catalano definitely is intending to run Leora, the Oaks runner up. And then Brad Cox, the filly that won the Eight Bells, they're seriously considering the Oaks in there. So I'm wondering how that's going to shape up pace-wise, because as fast as Serengeti Empress is early, what's it going to look like when a filly who's been running in sprints, like Break Even is her name, for the Kleins and Brad, what's it going to look like when they hook up down the backside of Belmont in the Acorn? I think already if those three horses from here running that race, it's really a fascinating race.
A couple of other performances that might have gone, you know, just a little bit either under the radar or just obscured by, you know, the storylines that came out of the weekend. Right in the middle of everything on Friday, there was that allowance race. And for those that were wondering why there was an allowance race, it was because NBC had a contractual obligation on the soccer game. So they threw in that second-level allowance 7-furlong race basically to kill time for the soccer game to end so that they could then pick things up with the Turf Sprint and the Kentucky Oaks. So that's why there was that race where Cummings was tremendous for Jimmy DeVito. And I was kicking myself, Mart, because that was a horse that I talked about on Thursday and even Friday, and then left off tickets. And I wanted to kill myself when Cummings just took off down the stretch and left them all in his wake at 22-1.
Well, I was with you because I did not like any of the three favorites in there: American Tattoo, Solid Wager, or the Baffert horse that drew in Soul Straight. I didn't like any of them, so I sprinkled around five or six long shots and didn't use this horse. And of course, I show up Monday morning at Churchill and Moquette. I forget what he Moquette had something to do with this horse coming that he was talking about. I'm feeling like shut up, Moquette, you know, because I let him off. I intentionally used long shots in this race, and I didn't use that one because, you know, who wants Ired Ortiz at 22-1? So, yeah.
Crazy. And 95 buyer for coming. So we'll see what Jimmy, you know, who certainly knows his way around a good sprinter. We'll see what Jimmy does with him next. Asmussen, for those that haven't heard the Asmussen visit from Tuesday, you really should pull it up on the archive, because he was as ebullient and funny and sassy as you'll ever hear. What a weekend for their barn. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I ended up writing something about it. And because, you know, coming out of the Derby after the last race, there's Scott Blasey on that sloppy track, and I'm walking around because I always park on the backside at my brother's barn because that's the easiest way. So I'm walking back, and he goes, "What about that weekend, huh, Marty?" And I'm like, "Oh, wait a minute. I've been dealing with all this Derby stuff. I'm thinking, what?" He goes, "You did attend the races this weekend, right?" And I'm like, "Well, wait a minute. Let me collect my thoughts here." So, you know, they won three grade ones, and they won the last race on Oaks night, and they swept the late double, beat some people out of Lemonite. Oh, my God, they beat some Al Stahl people out of some good money in the race right after the Derby. So, yeah, they had I think Steve won eight races the first week. So he's well on his way to another training title here at Churchill.
No, that's funny. That
you did attend the races.
He's the greatest. I got a great picture of him with Tina, actually. I forget what race we were waiting for, but not amazing. You talked about those two nightcap winners, maiden horses, Hala Walla, the first-time starter, 82 buyer, a candy ride that might be something. And we'll see where they go. And then there was Rotation. In the other race, didn't get as big a fig, but beat that horse Felix the Fox of Shugs that we've been kind of tracking, and you know, Get the Prize is the horse you're talking about with Al Stahl, and that horse, well, I think was 10-1, that was my pick, and took all kinds of money, got bet down to like 9-2, 4-1, and absolutely got beat a Zop in that race after the Derby. And, you know, speaking of Al Stahl, we should mention Tom's Day Tot. I know he got beat 4 lengths and change by McKinsey, but that was a good effort. And, you know, he probably got, you know, a 101, 102 buyer. So nice performance by Tom's Day Tot in there. And also, what about the sprint effort we got from Bobby's Wicked One?
Yeah. I asked Al about that horse, and he said he wants to turn him back to 3/4. I don't know what. I guess there's one of those overnight stakes here. Here I got a condition book. But anyway, I think he wants to, instead of like thinking about the Met Mile or something like that, he wants to actually turn him back a little bit.
Makes sense, and I'm sure they're between Indiana and Churchill and Prairie Meadows is open now as well. I mean, there's other places. There were a bunch of horses, Marty, at good prices behind some of the obvious horses. Bell's the One. How about Neil Pessin in the 8 Bells behind Break Even? You know, could have juiced up people's tickets. I thought Got Stormy was very notable. Ran a terrific race in the Distaff for Cassie, and Hot Creek Hustle for Vicky Foley behind Mr. Money. It put the spurs to some pricing, and there was one more. Tommy Bush in Clyde's Image in the Bricks and Mortar in the Turf Classic.
Yeah, it happens every Derby. It seems like you got some blow-ups that are, as Toby Callett would say, in the belly. The horses are second, right in the belly of the try. So yeah, it helps make for some nice prices.
Well, we're going to send you off looking ahead to Derby 2020. And, Mart, the assignment for next year is to give us a dry fast track. This has just been really
miserable.
Yeah, it's very hard. I enough of that already.
Yeah, my youngest daughter, she graduates tomorrow from U of L, by the way, Molly, the ice cream scooper from there at that Comfy Cow. And, you know, she's tired of it, too. I went to the Derby when I was a kid. It was always a beautiful day. And, you know, she's been going, and they think it's just a miserable time. So, yeah, let's try and get that done next year.
Well, and finally, it is a bit of a regional holiday in the sport. Certainly in the McGee clan, it is Samantha Siegel's birthday. So don't forget to.
Oh my gosh, May the 10th. Okay,
there it is.
Yeah. Okay. Happy birthday, SJ.
Samantha Siegel, one of the most popular personalities, owners in the game, breeders, and everything else.
And horse player, too.
I love it. Mark, have an enjoyable time tomorrow. Congratulations on Molly's graduation. And are we going to see you in Baltimore, yes?
Yeah. It's me, Nicole, Jay, and Jim Dunleavy. We just got a foursome this year.
Very nice. Well, because Dave Grenig has got a family. He's got his daughter in a major theatrical production. So, no Grenig. Well, we will see you. I will be there starting Sunday, and I will see you soon enough.
All right. Have a good day, buddy. Thank you.
The one and only Marty McGee, everybody. Let's take a top-of-the-hour timeout. We'll come back. Nick Tamaro is going to join us, and so much more. In addition, of course, beside Nick, we're going to talk to Scully. We're going to visit with Paul Matisse, Hammer, DeRosa, Nick Cassato. Back after this, hour 2.